I'm delighted now to welcome back to the show Dottie Indyke. She is the Executive Director of Creativity for Peace, and we have two campers from the summer camp Creativity for Peace with us right now as well, Rula Abu Hussein and Mai Fried, Palestinian and Israeli young women. Welcome, ladies, to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Dottie, tell us, for people who have never yet heard about Creativity for Peace, what it's all about.
Creativity for Peace is a program that nurtures the next generation of female leaders and peacemakers in Palestine and Israel. And the organization is 7 years old, and our program begins with a summer camp in New Mexico for 3 weeks, and then continues with year-round meetings in the Middle East. We've had 146 girls go through our program, and campers, once they've been through the New Mexico experience, they can become young leaders. And that means they are taking on advanced communication and leadership training, which is what Mai and Rula are doing.
You've both been here before.
Yes, right.
And these girls are former campers who are part of this program that builds leadership skills of all different types. And we have an ongoing program in the Middle East, and we have our program here in New Mexico. And we have 30 young leaders out of our 146 campers, and these are two of those.
Now, when you first came to the camp, when were you here? Was it last year, Rula?
No, I was a camper in 2005.
And Mai?
Also, I was with Rula in the camp.
Oh, okay. And so you learned all sorts of things. Was that the first time you'd had real social interactions with each other across, essentially across political lines?
Well, I guess, yeah.
Yes. Well, I'm a Palestinian living in Israel. I live also with Jewish people, but this is the first chance. This was the first chance for me to sit with a Jewish girl and talk about political things.
Yeah. Also for me, like, I've known Arab people, but not really close. I didn't really have close relationships, so it was the first time I had a chance to speak to them, to listen to them.
So what was it like speaking and listening to each other when you were first at the camp?
At the beginning, it was really hard for me, but during the camp, I learned, the camp gave me the skills how to listen and how to speak without interruption and...
For me, it was very shocking. I learned so many things that I wasn't even aware of. So it was very difficult. But
meaning what? Other people's stories?
Other people's stories, other people's reality stuff that I really like, the things that are going on in the occupation, stuff like that. So it was really shocking, really hard, but. It was like we got so much support, and it was great. Eventually, it was great to learn all these things and to get this kind of relationships with these girls.
And everybody basically ends up forming friendships with each other.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you see each other once you went back to Israel?
Well, we have retreats and meetings through the years when we come back from the camp. And, yeah, I see my... In the meetings.
Yeah, in the meetings of the camp during the year.
It's, I think, very important for everybody, I mean, not just in politically charged areas, but to remember that talking and listening are skills.
Exactly. One of the things we teach, that is like the fundamental underlying principle of what our dialogue program is about. And we do dialogue many mornings in camp for 3 hours at a time. We teach... From the very beginning, we teach what it means to be a good listener, a compassionate listener. And the girls, we ask the girls to say what it means to be a good listener. And it comes things like not interrupting, not thinking about what you're going to say next while someone is talking, not raising your hand while someone is talking, being open, listening with an open heart, listening with an open mind, being able to hear what someone else says even if you violently disagree with what it is that they're saying, being able to understand that it's their experience that they're expressing, and you don't have to agree with it to be a good listener. And then we also teach about authentic speaking. What does it mean to be a good speaker? It means I statements. It means speaking from your own personal experience. It means being clear. It means making eye contact. I mean, all these kinds of things, small and large. And then we have to practice for the whole 3 weeks that we're here. And then we continue to have the girls practice when they go home. And if you're a young leader, as Mai and Rula are, they get a lot of practice in good communication skills. And you're absolutely right. It takes practice. And most adults I know aren't good at this stuff.
No, so. Exactly. But it can be learned. I mean, the nice thing is it can be learned at any age.
I think probably. Although when we work with young women in part because they aren't so old that it's hard. They're stuck in their ways.
Right.
We're catching girls at a time when there's still a very much of an openness to change.
So you learn leadership skills. What does that actually look like? I mean, what do you learn, and then what do you do with it when you go back home?
I think that the main thing that we're working on is a different kind of leadership, because we work a lot about the emotional part of expressing feeling, be open to other people's feelings, in that way to get stronger, to get more powerful, to I guess gain knowledge and still care. And it's something very different from what we've been taught, actually, because...
What have you been told?
That you have to be strong and... I mean, you have to be strong in order to be strong. It's like you can't cry, you can't express your feelings, you can't care for everybody. You should really care about yourself and your own interests and...
And your own group.
And your own group, yeah. And now I know that it's not true. I believe that it's not true. I've learned, really, I've experienced that when I expressed my feeling and I really opened everything, it just got me much more powerful and much more, it really got me to be much more like bond to the other girls and even to myself in some parts, and it was really great.
What about you, Rula?
Well, through this training, I learned how to express my feelings without hurting the other side, how to accept the others, even if you have different ideas and different thoughts, how to facilitate groups. It was really useful.
So when you are at home and you're in, how is it, a Palestinian subculture inside of Israel?
Yes.
So what is your life like? How much interaction do you have with Jewish Israeli people?
Well, where I live, there's no Jewish people in my city, but close to my city there are some Jewish cities. And, well, we go and buy stuff from these cities, so it's the only interaction that we have with each other.
And so did you find that you, in the camp, were... maybe breaking ideas that you had about Israeli people, about Jewish people?
Yes, but actually I didn't have an extreme thoughts about them because my parents are really open and we have Jewish friends. But for me it was the first time that I can sit and really talk to a Jewish girl and ask her about her story, about her experience, thoughts, opinions, and also talk about my story and opinions.
This program, Dottie, has been going on for, 7 years now?
Right, 7 years.
So have you been following? I mean, I can't wait until, 10 years from now when
me
you
either.
And I are sitting here in the cafe together,
exactly.
Should we live so long.
Exactly. Talking about how these girls are running for office in Israel and Palestine, right?
For example.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
I mean, where are they at now, the young women from the first group, first couple of years group?
Well, I can't say that I know exactly where they are. I'm not as in touch with them because I have only been involved with the organization as in this capacity or in any real capacity since 2006. The very first year, the 2003 campers, we were really just trying to figure our program out. And a lot of those girls kind of drifted away over the years. However, one of them was Bisan Abu Elish, who was killed when in Gaza in January when the Israeli military shelled her house, she and two of her sisters and a cousin of hers.
And were all killed in their own house.
We're all killed in their own house. And after that, right after that happened, we had a meeting of campers, a gathering of campers in Israel, and a lot of girls from the 2003-2004 camps came back to Creativity for Peace to be with the other girls. But we have girls who are already pretty accomplished, even from later years. I mean, we have several girls who have just graduated from college. We have girls who are in the Army. We have a number of Jewish girls who are in the Army. And in the Army, they make presentations about their work for Creativity for Peace.
Really?
In their universities, they make both in the West Bank and in Israel, they make presentations about their work with Creativity for Peace. And so I think already they're showing the leadership, they're exercising the leadership qualities that we've taught them. Now, in terms of what their careers are going to be, that we're going to have to wait for the 10 years from now to see. I mean, some of our girls, we have the gamut of girls. You know, we've got girls who want to be artists, doctors, lawyers, I don't know, help me here, scientists, everything. So, you know, this is a kind of a fluid thing. You know, when you're young, you don't know exactly what you're going to do, so it's just going to take a little while. And for the Israeli girls, the Jewish Israeli girls who have to serve in the military following their graduation from high school, those girls are delayed and they're going to university and starting their careers, so they're going to even be older. We'll wait and see, but I have no doubt that we are creating both a new generation of, with a whole different set of ideas, but and also we're having a ripple effect already, as you and I have spoken about before.
Yeah, how do you see that? Where do you see it?
Well, maybe you can help me here, girls, but I think one way is girls go home and they talk to their families about what they've experienced, and for some of their family members, I think this is a little bit radical. Girls talk to their friends, and introduce their friends to girls from the other side, and so that in that way it spreads, the work spreads. Every young person in Israel can't go through our program, but if they know somebody who has been through our program, there's education that's being done there. Then there's inside universities, inside the Army, inside the community. One of our girls, one of our young leaders, was chosen to represent the youth of her village in the elections earlier this year, and she stood up in front of a village of 5,000 people in Israel and said that she thought it was important that the young people in the village vote their conscience on the candidates, not just follow the behavior of their parents. So in that way, I call that major leadership and major ripple effect.
Indeed. What are some of the activities that you do in the camp? Obviously, you do conversations with each other, but you do other things as well.
We have the art program, which is a big part of the camp. It's called Creativity for Peace. It's very special to... It's other way to express your feelings and to... Other way to connect each other, not only in the tough moments of the dialogue, but also in the really interesting, creating moments in art. And, of course, we have all the times in between, which we sit together, speak, dance, going out, many things.
We're doing cooking with Johnny Bullardson.
Nice.
We're doing Wise Fools. We're doing circus stuff with the Wise Fool women. We went to the opera. We had a backstage tour and dinner at the opera, and we watched a rehearsal of the letter. We went to
Mountain
a cowboy
center.
Yeah, we go to the Mountain Center and do the ropes course every year. That's a really big...
How long is this camp?
3 weeks long.
3 weeks?
3 weeks. And we pack it in, Mary Charlotte. We pack in the activities. Because they do dialogue in the morning, art in the afternoon, and then some half days, you know, we're going on field trips. And as Mai says, they're living together in a house, in shared bedrooms, 24/7. So whether they... No matter how hard it is for them, they're having to relate on a full-time basis for 3 weeks.
So when you, both of you have gone home to your country, to your communities, and this, as we've discussed in past programs with you, Dottie, it is with a great deal of thought that this summer camp is for young women and not for young men or not for a co-ed group. When you go back to the young men that are your friends and what do you want to call it, colleagues, but peers, how do you share the work with them? Are they open to it?
Well, actually, my friends in general not really open to this kind of things. Not specifically a man, the guys. But when I came back from my first experience at camp, I tried to tell them about the camp, what we do, what kind of work we do, and they seem to be more open about it and more understanding.
What about you, Mai?
The way I see it is like it's very hard for them to listen to it, to know about it, and some of them just wouldn't even try to hear about it, and some of them really care, really are really interested in it, and it's also hard for them to know that they're going to the army and they really want to stay in this position where they are really, really sure about like going to the army and fight for your country and stuff like that, and it's very hard to listen to other opinions. But some of them really care, really, really want to know what they're going to before they're going to the army, and it really depends on the person, I guess.
So, for people you know who have already gone into the army, are they conflicted about what they're doing or what they're going to have to possibly do?
Yeah, many of them. Yeah, many of them are really scared of what's going to happen to them, what they're going to have to do, what they're going to have to face. Yeah, it's very scary.
And then how did they deal with it? I mean, do you know people who have either refused to go in or who have tried to resist when they are in?
I know some people who did that. I know some people who just, like, tried not to think about it too much, and that was their way to deal with it, to just not deal with it so much. And there are people that are facing it, and yeah, it's very, very difficult for them.
I would think that on the other side of it is, on the Palestinian side, is the sense of powerlessness when you're on the side that doesn't have an army.
Mm-hmm.
And dealing with that must be very difficult as well.
It's actually not easy, because as a Palestinian living in Israel, well, we don't serve in the army because we don't have to, actually. But at the same time, we see the army, what the army does to our people in the Palestine side in West Bank and Gaza. So it's really hard. We feel like we can't do anything. We can't resist. We can't do anything because we're living inside Israel. So it's not really easy.
Mai is one of those people who didn't want to serve. She's one of a large minority of, if you can say that, of Jewish Israelis who didn't want to serve in the military.
So you've already been through this process.
Yeah, it was a long process trying not to go in the army. It was very difficult, and I tried to get out before I had to go in, but I couldn't. So only when I really got in, was like a little fight for 3 months, and then
what happened? What did you do?
Try to refuse not to put on the uniforms, not to take gun, not to go on the bus that takes you to the military base, to go into jail, stuff like that.
Did you go into jail?
I was supposed to, but there was no place in the jail, so I just I stayed.
Just lucky.
Yeah,
just
lucky me. I just stayed like grounded to the military base. That way, just to try to ignore all the shouting and all this kind of stuff.
And what happened then? Were you discharged?
Yeah, it's like they consider me as like mentally disabled or something like that. So they just let me go.
It's obvious to me that you're mentally disabled.
Heavens. Now, did you have other friends or peers who were doing the same thing as you, or were you alone?
Yeah, I met some people there. I met some people who were doing the same thing, and I also have friends that I know from school or stuff like that are doing the same thing.
So were you in solidarity with them in, for example, refusing to put on the uniform and so on? I mean, were you in the same actual physical place at the same time?
Yeah, which was much, much easier. Like, I got the support. It can really break you when you're there. So it was really, really good for me that they were also there.
Yeah. Something that, Dottie, you and I have talked about is that on the one hand, it's very important for people to hear each other's stories, and especially their personal stories. On the other hand, it's really not productive to talk about history and the conflicting narratives of history.
Exactly. We teach the girls that it's not their responsibility. Their governments are not their responsibility. They didn't cause the conflict. They had no role in it. And then if we talk politics, we just go round and round and round, just like the way things are right now, and that nothing's ever going to change. In dialogue the other morning, the two facilitators showed the girls visually what they were doing, because at least this group of girls at camp right now have definitely been into the wanting to talk about politics and wanting to blame and wanting to say all of you and all of us. And so they did. Anna, Ellen, and Sylvia, our facilitators, did with a blanket pull one side. It's but I'm right. But I'm right. But I'm right. But I'm right. But this is my story. We also do an exercise called the historical timeline, where we have the Palestinian girls show what they learn in history, what they have learned of history, and the Jewish girls what they have learned of history. And there's oftentimes very different stories.
Exactly.
That our dialogue is based on the idea that. You can't argue with a person's experience. And in hearing someone's experience, your heart opens. Because the stories these girls tell are difficult. They're difficult for me to hear. They're really difficult for the girls from the region to hear. And oftentimes they are very, like Mai says, they are stories that the other side had no idea about. Like, you know, the experience of the girls in the West Bank is shocking. Like that soldiers go into their house and steal, or that soldiers kill innocent people. A lot of the Jewish girls are completely shocked and in disbelief that such a thing might happen. That's what they learn. That's how they learn it. But they learn it by someone saying, this is what I saw, this is what I experienced. How can you argue with that as opposed to talking politics, you know, completely different?
Creativity for Peace is having a public event on Tuesday, the 4th of August. It's a live conversation with the campers and young leaders at the Armory for the Arts at 6:30. And for reservations, people who are listening can call 984-1370. That's 505-984-1370. We're just about out of time, but I want to thank you all so much for being here with us. Dottie Indyke is Executive Director of Creativity for Peace. Rula Abu Hussein and Mai Fried are campers and young leaders at Creativity for Peace. Thank you both so much for being with us.
And we're happy to be here, Mary Charlotte.
And you can also find them on the web at creativityforpeace.com. You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. KSFR streams live on the web at ksfr.org. You can email me at radiocafe@ksfr.org. We are podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show whenever you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, and you can also find us at facebook.com/radiocafe. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team, and after that, the Jazz Experience.